Good morning, everybody. My name is Vince. Happy Thanksgiving. Happy Thanksgiving. Jeez. You guys are like, woo. Okay, happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Just so you know, the introvert in me hates that I just did that to you, but the speaker in me likes it, so. How's everyone doing with 31 and 31? Anyone engaging in this? I find that it's one of these things where by about 8 o'clock at night, all of a sudden I'm like, oh crap, I forgot my 31 and 31. And so I'm frantically running around, you know, trying to find people. Hey, can I help you with something? But it's still good, keeps me in the game, right? It's important. Okay. So I've been talking with people all week about the story we're going to study today. And I realized it's a topic that at first I thought was kind of like I could package it up and be like, okay, here's what we're going to talk about today, especially on Thanksgiving. And as I talked to people and different people and got them to share their stories with me, I realized this is kind of one of those topics that really is huge. Or maybe I should say it this way, it's foundational. It's a topic that kind of touches our lives in a million different places, our spirituality and however you conceive of it. So today I want to talk about it. I'm going to give you 35 minutes of my best thinking on it. And if I could possibly think that I could somehow solve this question or give you an answer to this question in 35 minutes, I would be on crack. And in fact, if anyone says they can sit up here and in 30 minutes explain the answers and give you a nice clean answer for this question, they're on crack too. Because I think this one's huge. And I think that's okay. I know we like to have things kind of packaged up nicely so it feels like we left here and we're like, ah, I have the answer. I've solved it. This is lovely. I can go home and have my Thanksgiving turkey and not think anymore. But that's not how Friends Church rolls. We believe your spirituality is very important. We also believe that you're all unique people. So there's no one-size-fits-all answers. And we also feel that it's more important to climb the spiritual mountain than it is to have a picture of somebody else who climbed the spiritual mountain for you. You get what I'm saying? So today we're going to do a bit of lifting. And what I want you to do is I want you to kind of go a place with me to get some of your inner narrative going. And unfortunately, the timing of this isn't outstanding as it's Thanksgiving, but I need to go to a bit of a darker place. Just before I say something, just so you know, I'm okay. I just had my meeting with my counselor this week, so she's worked through my head and got everything cleaned up for me, so I'm in a healthy place. And I say that to you because about 5 years ago, I got a call from my dad telling me that my mom was diagnosed with cancer. And at the time, we knew it was terminal. They said she'd probably live about 2 years. And so 5 years later, on September 17th, a couple weeks ago, I got the second call that said my mom passed away. And it's sad. Don't get me wrong. It's been a sad time for me and a sad time for our family. The other day there was a commercial and someone talked about their mom and all of a sudden I realized I'm watching a commercial and I'm crying. Okay, so let me just give you guys a heads up. I'm okay. You're all feeling all this empathy rolling off the stage. I'm okay. It's sad, but, and I'll say this for your benefit, not for mine. My mom had a really rough sickness, and so, in some sense, this is a relief, because she was in a lot of pain. And just to coach you, if someone like me ever comes to you and says, hey, my mom passed away, don't say that line to them, okay? This is supposed to be funny to give you guys a chance to chuckle a little bit. You never start with, oh, but she's in a better place or anything like that. Just say, I'm so sorry. If they say, hey, my mom, you know, she had a rough time. This is a relief for her. Then you can go there. But just keep smiling and say, I'm so sorry for your loss, things like that. Make sense? No one's ever said that to me here, so we're all good. So whenever you have a passing like your mother, you go to deep questions. And when I say deep questions, you go to really deep questions. And my mom was a very strong, traditional Christian woman. And throughout her illness, she would say this to me. She'd say, I'd love for God to heal me right now. I'd love that. But if God doesn't, that's okay too. Because I feel God with me every day. She'd say, when I'm tired, God's there. When I want to give up, I feel God with me. When I want to give in to the feelings of fear and uncertainty and what's the future going to hold and who's going to take care of my husband and my kids, she'd say, God is with me in those times. She'd say, God is a God of peace. So my reflection has been this. Where does God show up in your life? Think about that for a second. Where does God show up? Now for some of you, your concept of God doesn't even allow that kind of language. But just allow me that metaphor today, okay? Where does God show up? I've known people say God heals people. But I've never seen people healed in my life. So where does God show up? I've talked to people who said that they think God protects people. But I know people who have been extremely devout, who have been hurt. Some people believe God blesses people. And again, some of the most devout people I know in my life have been the poorest people that I know. Some of you have hoped God would heal you, take away your addictions, bring you peace and comfort, make you feel like you're never alone. Some have found comfort in just this idea that this isn't just some random mess, that there's maybe something behind this. So I'm not sure where you all are in this story, or what your story is. But I think this whole question of where does God show up, it starts in these dark places, but it goes everywhere, doesn't it? I think this idea of where God shows up in our lives is probably one of the most important kind of overarching concepts for anyone who says they're a theist, who believes in any sort of greater than, more than, divine, whatever you want to call it. I think this is one of the most fundamental questions. Because I think our spirituality is based in this concept of what impact does God have in the world? Or if I can say it this way, where does God show up in your life and in my life? Because if God never shows up, we're essentially atheists at this point, right? If God's far away, la la land, no impact on our lives whatsoever. But if we think there's some concept of God or some idea of spirituality in which there's a divine entity that somehow has influence in our lives, what that influence is changes everything. And the story we're going to look at today, I think on first read through the 21st century Christian lens, is a story about this. It's a story about Jesus being in a town where basically he made the best party ever. A couple weeks ago, Jeff told you about him turning water into wine, remember? The party was kind of lame, running out of booze, water into wine, party's great. So Jesus is back in a town where they clearly loved the guy, right? And this guy comes to him from another town. So he's in this town, another town, about a half of. And he says to Jesus, and again, we're going to go back to the dark place again, my son's dying. He says, will you come to my house and heal him? And again, remember, in these stories, healing is commonplace. So if that doesn't fit with your conception of God, that's okay. Just bear with me for a few minutes. Scholars commonly see Jesus as saying something like this. When you see what I can do, you will believe. And the guy says, hey, I believe. And Jesus says, your son's healed. Go home. The next day, as the man's going home, some people from his house meet him on the road and tell him his son suddenly got better. And upon pairing times, they realize his son got better exactly at the same time when Jesus said, your son will be healed. And John finishes the story this way. So the man believed along with his whole household. And this is the way the story has been read for, I don't know, centuries. Proof of what Jesus can do. But I think there's a problem with this reading. I've been studying this story for weeks now, banging my head against it. I couldn't get anything out of it. Until all of a sudden I had an epiphany. And it came from a concept of storytelling that I think John employs. Let me explain by showing you a little clip from a movie that's a bit older now. I didn't want to ruin the punchline of any new movies, so take a look.
Okay, look alive! We're all here.
Heads up, tossing cells. Heads up, tossing cells.
I almost forgot. I hate to deprive you of this. Salvation lies within.
Yes, sir.
Anyone recognize the movie, Shawshank Redemption? Outstanding movie. But let's go through the clip. How does it start? The camera zoomed in on what? A Bible. Go back through the clip in your head for a second. How many times did they show a Bible? They zoomed in the Bible. There was like handing of the Bible. The guy takes the guy's Bible. They exchange Bible verses. At the end, he's got the Bible in his hand. He hands it back through the bars. And says, salvation lies within, right? It's kind of ironic because the guy hides his, he's got a little pick hammer inside the Bible. And he tunnels out and he escapes from prison because of it. But that aside, how often do they show the Bible? Because the Bible is important for the story, right? At the end, the guy gives the warden back the Bible. He hides it in his office. He opens the Bible up, realizes there's a pick hammer slot inside the Bible, and he realizes that's how the guy escaped. The storyteller wants us to pay attention to the Bible. And that's the heart of storytelling. We kind of telegraph something where it's like, no, pay attention to this over there. You know, you're watching an action movie and the guy's gun slides underneath the table and wedges and they kind of like zoom in and then they pause on it. You're like, okay, 5 minutes later, the hero gets the gun and kills the bad guy with that gun, right? Or the glowing door in a horror movie. Of course, the monster's going to jump out of the glowing door. We all know that. We don't know why the people go towards the glowing door, but that's what happens. It's a storytelling method of going, pay attention to this. This is going to be important. And I think John's no different. He's a storyteller. And there's part of this story I think he wants us to pay attention to because he repeats it over and over again, just kind of like the Bible scene. Every scene, they reference this idea. So let's go back to the beginning of the story. Picture a guy. He's an important guy, like suit and tie guy. But today his sleeves are rolled up and his jacket's aside. And he's sitting on the edge of his son's bed. And he's wetting a cloth in a cold basin of water. And he puts the cloth on his son's forehead. And his son's just, like all you can see of him is just the top of his face because he's covered in blankets. It's hot outside. But he can't stop shivering. The father has a cloth on his head trying to cool him, but even then he can feel the heat radiating off of him. This has been going on for a week already. Like, it's getting bad. The last day, it's gotten worse. His son's not even communicating anymore. He's mumbling, but it's not making any sense. And feel as a father, like, how would that feel to have your son in that condition right underneath you? And you can't do anything to fix it. It's got to be just tearing this guy up inside. And so he concocts this crazy plan. Because what he needs, he needs a miracle. And he'd heard there's a guy in the next town over who's done some pretty crazy stuff. Like, miracle stuff. Like, we're not sure this actually happened, but this is how the story went down. And so the father goes, wow, maybe there's hope. So he kisses his son goodbye, whispers in his ear to say, hold on, I'm bringing help. And he leaves him in the care of some friends. And he travels a half day's journey to another town. And he walks up to Jesus in the afternoon, and he's desperate. There's no hello, hi, how are you doing? It's basically like, my son's dying. And I need your help. I really need your help. So pause from the story for a second. Remember the Bible in Shawshank Redemption? It tells us that later on we're going to need to know this. There's something important in how John tells a story. Because over and over again, the story seems to revolve around the guy saying, what he actually says to Jesus is, come to my home and heal my son. Come to my home. So I want you to pay attention to that line. Whatever it phrases, this idea of Jesus coming to where his son is, a half day's journey away, okay? So he says, Jesus, will you come to my home and heal my son, for my son is dying. And Jesus responds with this. He says, will you never believe in me unless you see miraculous signs and wonders? And you notice how I say that kind of changes the tone of the story, right? Because if I read it like this, kind of in this like prophetic sense, you will only, you know, believe in this if you have signs and miracles. It's this kind of positive thing, right? Like signs and miracles are good. Yeah, hey. But if I do it this way, like, will you only believe if you have signs and miracles? Like, geez, people. It really changes the story, doesn't it? And how you read that story really changes things. And I actually think it's read more the second route. Jesus is kind of like, seriously, people, do you not get what's going down here? So the father pleads with Jesus. Actually, let me say one more comment. When he says, you will not believe unless you see signs and miracles, that word you, if we were in the South, we would have translated y'all. Y'all. Jesus isn't talking to the guy. He's talking to y'all. And I think there's a case to be made to say, we're part of y'all. And the question I think he's trying to get at is, why do you believe? And what do you believe? So the father pleads with Jesus, says, please, please, please come to my house before my son dies. You just hear the pain in the guy's voice. Like he is torn up inside. And Jesus says this to him. He says this, go back home. Your son will live. And the man believed what Jesus said and started home. Remember I told you to pay attention? Go back home. And so he started home. This is important. Pay attention. The last line he says, and the man believed. But what did the man believe? Think about what the story said so far. Jesus said, your son will live. What did the man need to believe? Because when you go to the doctor, and I see a couple doctors in the room here, and you have a virus, right? They like poke and prod you and look in your eyes and tongue, like ears. I don't know what they're looking for. I swear they're just doing that because that's the thing. They're not even looking at it. They're like checking their iPhone, Facebook account, you know? And they say what? Drink plenty of fluids, get plenty of rest, you'll be fine in a couple days, right? That's what happens. And I think the guy believes exactly the same thing about Jesus and his son. Jesus is going, essentially, your son's got a virus. Give it a couple days, he'll be right as rain. There's no talk about healing, nothing. It's just, your son will live. It's almost kind of like, hey, I know the symptoms, you're all good. It's all about that. And that's really all the father has to believe at this point in the story. So when he says, and the father believed, that's the gist of it, I think. The text goes this way. Well, the man was on his way. Some of his servants met him with the news that his son was alive and well. He asked them when the boy had begun to get better, and they replied, yesterday afternoon at 1:00. His fever suddenly disappeared. Then the father realized that this was the very time that Jesus told him, your son will live. And his entire household believed in Jesus. If I got to translate that passage, I'd have translated it this way. Because think about it. He thinks, doctor, you have a virus. Don't worry, you won't die. You'll be fine in a couple days. That's what I think he's believing in his head. Then he realizes the moment Jesus said something, bam. He's just like, what? Because think about what he's done. Remember I told you to pay attention? Come home. Come to my home. Jesus, you need to come to my home. Because in his mind, Jesus is here. His son's over there. no healing happens. He's of the mind, and it's funny, because John, in John chapter 9, this is what happens. There was many healers in the day. Jesus isn't the only one. This is like common stories. But Jesus actually goes to a guy, it's kind of gross, but he spits in the ground. Jesus spits in the ground, rubs the spit with his thumb, picks up the mud, puts in the guy's eyes who couldn't see, boom, the guy can see. It's like magician stuff, right? Like abracadabra. That's the kind of thing they're thinking. You get the guy who's got the thing with the person who needs to be healed. You put them together. Magic happens. You have a chance. So in the guy's mind, I need to get Jesus to my son. When that happens, maybe he'll do something. I don't know what he's going to do, but maybe he can help my son. Jesus isn't coming to my son. That means we got a problem. And yet, what he realizes is, Jesus is over here, his son's over there, God heals his son. And I think it blows his mind. He's going, I didn't even think to ask for that, or to look for that. I didn't see that coming. And the second time he says he believed, I think he believes something different. I think he believed that God could show up in a way and in a place that he never expected. And I think God went from this idea here to this idea that was bigger than anything he could conceive of. And I think that's why this story is important to us. That's why I think this gets to the question of, where do we see God showing up? Can't help but wonder if this John put the story, or this story in the Bible, or his account, for people like me. Maybe people like you. To say, God might show up in a way that's bigger than you ever expected. In a way you never expected. He originally wrote this to a bunch of people who I believe were wrestling with this very question. So remember the overall theme we're using for this series? If you haven't been here at the beginning, I'll give you a quick overview. The people reading this gospel, we think, believed that the world had gone to hell in a handbasket for a reason. Because God wasn't around. They believed there was some time in the past, this kind of mythical idea of the Garden of Eden, when everything was good, because God was there. Then God left the building, and all hell broke loose for the last however long. And they thought at some point in history, something would shift. They called it the New Age. And in this New Age, God would come back into the world and make things good again. Right? You're sick. God's gone. God's going to come back. You'll be well again. Someone in your family you love died. It's because God's gone. When God comes back, that person won't be dead anymore. They believed this in a literal way. You would not die in this New Age. And they said, we would know the New Age starts when a certain character enters history that they called the Messiah. And John is extremely explicit, because every story ends with this, because Jesus is the Messiah. In John's mind, Jesus is the Messiah, and for anyone who grew up in Christianity, I'm guessing you're not going to argue at that point on me. We grew up with this idea that Jesus is the Messiah, but the problem is, the New Age should have started then. If Jesus is the Messiah and he's in town, that means God's in the world again. Thumbs up. Bad stuff gone. Kids shouldn't be sick. People shouldn't be dying. But they were. And so here's John trying to convince a bunch of people that the New Age has started, and they're going like, duh, look around. We're oppressed. We're spiritually beat up. Our religion's being taken away from us. It's probably never been this bad in our history. The New Age has not started. And so John, I think, is trying to say this. What if? I know you think that when the New Age starts, you're going to sit back here and God's just going to fix everything. Like, you know, your dilapidated house, New Age starts, boom, your house is all fixed and everything's looking beautiful again, right? That's what their thoughts were. God will fix this stuff. And he says, what if God looks a little bit different? What if this New Age isn't about sitting back and letting God do all the work? What if God shows up in a different way? What does that look like? What does that look like for you? Where could God show up? Where are you looking for your spirituality? I don't know if this metaphor works for you, but where does God show up in your life? Some are looking for God to make their decisions because they don't want to screw anything up, right? If God makes them, it's going to be perfect. Some are looking for God to have a plan for their lives. I don't know what to do. If I do what God wants to do, then everything's going to be good, right? Some are looking for God to bring happiness or joy or peace. Some are looking for God to fill their loneliness. We're looking for God in a particular place. But what if God's showing up in a different place? A place we're not even looking. How could that change your spirituality? What does that mean for you? I've been playing with this metaphor in my mind, this idea of a God-colored life, because to me, God shows up. If God can show up anywhere, and if I think God has any sort of interaction in my life, then somehow my life will be changed, colored. I don't always know how it's going to happen. I don't always know where it's going to happen. I don't even know why it happens. But there's this metaphor of God colored. So what does it look like for you? How could God color your life? Now maybe you're somebody who's been connecting with God your whole life. You grew up in religion or in a tradition. Maybe for you, like the father in the story, you don't think this consciously, but you function like you have God all figured out. You kind of feel like you know where God's going to show up, right? This idea, Jesus has to come to my house for my son to get healed, that's how this works. So has it ever happened to you that God surprised you? Think about it. Are you even willing to let God surprise you? To show up in a way and in a place you never expected? Jesus is here, God heals the guy over there, you're like, I didn't even see that coming. Are you open to that? Has God shown up in hardship not by making it go away, but by being with you through it all? Maybe it's through sickness or financial hardship or relationship messes. Have you experienced God through those events, but not in the way that you'd hoped, but maybe in a different way? Because God certainly doesn't seem to take those all away, does he? Otherwise, my life would be rosy, and I'm guessing yours would be too. On the other side, has God shown up miraculously when you're looking for a quiet, kind of silent God or a separate God? That's my biggest problem. I look for God in a lot of places, but in the miraculous, I don't like that one. That one wigs me out. Messes me up philosophically and ethically. So I think, okay, I can understand God over here. I can explore God over here, but over there in that supernatural nonsense, I don't want to touch that one. Where does this sit for you? People often come to me with stories of supernatural, and in their minds, God changes the physical reality. I don't like that one. Am I open to God showing up there? Am I no better than the father in the story saying, I think I know how God works? Whenever I've opened myself up to God in new places, Kingsfold events, beauty in nature, amazing skills of humans, when I see the skyline of Calgary, the I have God moments every time. It's amazing how when I open myself up, God shows up in ways I never expected. So for some of you who grew up with this concept of God, this week I want to encourage you to do something. I want you to see God in a different way. If you grew up seeing God in prayer or reading your Bibles, get outside. Can you feel God in nature? See it through the golden leaves of trees right now? Maybe that's where God's going to show up for you. If you're used to seeing God in formalized religion like church and through preachers like me, look for God within. Could God be this still small voice inside you right now? Here's what I want you to do this week. Focus on looking for God in a place you never thought you would find God. Be deliberate. When you get up in the morning or on your commute to work, I don't know what works for you, before you go to bed, just say to yourself, okay, God, I don't know where you're going to show up. I don't know how you're going to color my life, but I'm open. And then keep your eyes open. For those of you who just started this whole journey with God, this whole idea of even theism, you're kind of like, well, not super comfortable with it just yet. The beautiful thing about your journey is you don't got any preconceived notions, really. You're not like me, you've got 42 years of ingrained doctrine in my head that I have to get out constantly. You're like a clean slate. I'm envious, can you tell? Have you ever tried this? Are you willing to open yourself up to this thing called spirituality or God, in however you conceive of that? For you, I want to encourage you a different way. At the end of the story, the father believed. He and his family took this leap and said, okay, let's believe that this thing is, whatever this thing is, let's believe that this thing is. Now what? That's what I want to encourage you to do. What if you took the leap today and said, I want to believe that God can color my life? I'm going to keep it as broad as that. What if you believe that God could color your life? Could influence you in some way, could shape or hone you, could be present. I don't know what it looks like, but what if you believe that? What if you took the leap today and said, that's how I'm going to live my life this week? So for you, I want to encourage you this way. This week when you get up this morning, or every day when you get up this morning this week, look for God in your life. Take that leap and say, okay, God, I want to see you today. And whatever that means. Would you try? Because you know what? If there's a God out there, and that God is anything better than me, I want that influence in my life. I want a God-colored life, don't you? If God is bigger and more knowledgeable and more loving, more anything than I am, I want some of that action. I want my life to look a bit more like that. And my bet is, there's something inside of each of you that wants that too. To have a God-colored life. To see God in places we never thought we'd see God. To be like that guy and say, I thought I had this thing all figured out, but what I realize now is God's going to show up and in ways and in places I never expected. That's the beauty of a spiritual journey. So let me leave you with that. Happy Thanksgiving. And may we be open to seeing the God that we choose to believe shows up. Amen.